This week I saw an old movie, one that was one of my favorite comedies. It's a movie called Baby Boom. And Diane Keaton in this movie plays this super efficient businesswoman, super driven. And she gets a phone call in the middle of the night that says she has inherited something and she can't hear what the person says. So she shows up at the airport to find out what she has inherited. And she's saying, what is it? Is it jewelry? Is it a ring? You know, she's wondering what she's inherited. And it turns out that she has inherited a baby. She is absolutely freaked out by this idea. And she tells the woman who gives her the news, I can't have a baby. I have a 12:30 lunch meeting. I'm not the right person for this. Today in our epistle reading, we have the story of an inheritance that we are given, an inheritance that is imperishable, undefiled, unfading. And I don't know about you, but when I think that I'm supposed to pass on knowledge of that inheritance, I want to say, like this businesswoman did, I'm not the right person for this. But the thing is, we don't inherit the kingdom of God and the work of God because of our perfection. We inherit because of our doubts, our vulnerability, our capacity for reaching other unsure souls. The businesswoman turned out to be qualified in spite of her weaknesses and her vulnerabilities. And to do the work of God, we are qualified because of our vulnerabilities. Because in 1 Peter we hear these words that if we seek God with our hearts, others will see the genuineness of your faith. When I first began to explore the life of faith and religion, I used to overhear people talking about the day that Jesus first came to them and where they were, and I just was embarrassed a little at hearing these stories, and then I was kind of jealous, and then I was a little suspicious, because I thought, first of all, how do you know it was Jesus that came to you? And if it was, why hasn't Jesus come to me? Where was I when all this Jesus experiencing was going on? All of my life, I have felt like I've been a half step behind everybody else. I was thinking again, as I have felt most of my life, they already get this. Why don't I? Basically, I wanted to know, why don't I understand if all these other people do? Why was I the one left out? I know now, though, that the others don't know more or better than I. They found a way around needing that knowledge, or they're bluffing, or pretending, or they suppress the questions that I allow to surface. After my dad died, I used to look at people who had also lost a loved one, and I would say, they're doing so much better than I am with my loss. What is going on? And a friend of mine said, the problem is you're comparing your insides to their outsides. She said, you know what's going on inside your heart, but they're not letting you see what's going on inside their hearts. So the problem is not that you're not doing as well or you're not adjusting as well. The problem is that they're not showing the same things that you are showing or the same things that you're seeing from the inside out. In the life of faith, I always assume by seeing the outside air of confidence that people project that they have no questions. Their outsides project supreme knowledge, but they cannot know God perfectly, or God would not be God. If a person believes that they know God perfectly, they don't know God at all, but they have created a convenient, pocket-sized, explicable idol that they can carry around and explain completely. And then today we come to the story of Thomas, who gets a lot of bad press. He's disrespected. He's dismissed as doubting. And I think maybe we should call him genuine Thomas, because he's the one that said out loud that he was nervous about this experience of Jesus that they were having. The others probably didn't have any more confidence than he did. He simply expressed his questions out loud. Thomas is the patron saint of people like me who at first wonder why everyone else seems to know more than we do. He's the patron saint of everyone who voices questions and doubts about their life of faith. As it turns out, he is one of the disciples, and he is the person who shows us this great truth, which is that you don't need perfect certainty to carry the news of Christ. The inheritance of the imperishable is given to all of us, not only to people whose faith seems so perfect that they have no questions or doubts. In fact, I think we're particularly well equipped to do the work of God if we have questions, because our questions will give hope to others who feel they're being left out of the special knowledge. After all, if we could fully explain God, God would not be God, but would be no greater than our human intellect, no more expansive than our human imagination. I once read a quote that gave me great hope about my lack of certainty and about my questions that I voiced. The quote says this: "Those who trust God most are those whose faith permits them to risk wrestling with Him over the deepest questions of life. Good hearts are captured in a divine wrestling match. Fearful, doubting hearts stay clear of the mat." In other words, if you ask the questions of God, you trust that God is big enough to answer those questions. I believe that in the church world, in the faith world, our need to explain and to prove that we're the ones with the special knowledge, that we're the ones who understand, that pretension holds us back. Our unwillingness to say, "I don't know either," our unwillingness to be vulnerable holds us back. And it discourages others who feel that half step behind, and they never ask how to find God for themselves. I think some of the most powerful and hope-giving words in life are, "I don't know, I can't explain it, but I have seen it." We draw others to God not by certainty and omniscience, but by our vulnerability, by our own doubts, by having the trust and the humility to say, "I don't understand." In this life, in this church, this community of faith, I honestly believe that we find God most powerfully when we admit that we never had the secret at all, that we don't have any special knowledge, but that we speak of God as best we can, admitting we don't know much for certain. So I resist the urge to denigrate Thomas for his doubt and for his questions. I have learned the value of living with and of treasuring all that I do not know, and of treasuring the way that not knowing equips me to relate to other people. I have questions, and in those questions I see God standing in that closed and locked and fear-filled room. And I know that because God can hear my questions and does not doom me because of those questions, I know that God is not a philosophical theory, but a reality that changes my reality. Thomas, the one disciple honest enough to express his doubt, touched the hands of Christ. And with our questions, we can touch the hands of God and be the hands of God, because as 1 Peter calls it, we have the genuineness of faith. We are the ideal persons to carry God's good news, because we prove that even those with doubts and questions have direct access to God. We protest, "I'm not the right person for this." And God says, "You are the perfect person because of your vulnerability." I think all of us in this church, as much, again, bad press as the word evangelism gets, I think this church is equipped particularly to reach out to others and to show how a community of faith can really put us in touch with God, can give us that access to God without the certainty, without the judgmentalism. We can reach out to others in God's name because we have the courage and the authenticity to say, I don't understand it either. If we're honest, we admit we don't know much about God. We don't understand much about God, but despite our feeling of inadequacy, we can stop saying of our call to speak of God, I'm not the right person for this. We're exactly the right people to do God's work. Our imperfection makes us perfect for the job.